So, Bill, thanks so much for coming in to talk to me.
Oh, you're welcome.
What are some of the projects keeping you busy right now as a teacher?
Well, I am proudly in my 34th year as a public school music educator. The last 30 of those have been at Fairport High School, so that is a full-time commitment and a full-time life. And so that is something that is, I'm very blessed to call myself an educator in the Fairport schools. It's an amazing program. It was when I was a student there way back, and we've tried so hard to maintain the ideals and the traditions that were there so many years ago and to continue to foster them and to grow with the program over the years. So that's always exciting. That's exciting every single day. And I have a number of other jobs that I do at some colleges and through the Eastman Community Music School, which you're very aware of, I think, with the ECMS stuff that I've been doing.
And that's, to bring alive some of what are some of these traditions and ideals of being part of band in Fairport schools. For you, what are some of the things you are keeping, but what are some things you've been proud to develop?
I think that I'm very fortunate in that I grew up in the Fairport program. I grew up in the town of Fairport, and I had some amazing educators from the time that I started. And one of the ideals that we've tried to maintain in Fairport is to try to line up students on instruments with instructors that really play those instruments and have that from the time they start through the time they graduate. It's called a vertically structured program. So our administrations have, through the years, allowed us the flexibility to schedule our days such that we're in our cars and traveling to different buildings and able to teach students on instruments that we know and play well. That's been something that has been a real kind of a cornerstone and a hallmark of our program that we're proud of. And, you know, it's gotten harder as our school districts have gotten a little bit more spread out. We're maybe a little thinner, so we have to, you know, get in the car more often and travel around. But it's key to it's core to what we do in terms of lesson instruction on our instruments. And that has resulted in both having expertise with the students and also having, a relationship with students over a number of years. So it's exciting to me to be able to know a kid when he or she's in fifth grade, and then all these years later, see what's happened to them and develop them as a musician, as a person, all those years.
That is wonderful, because as much as I appreciate my middle school orchestra director who played trumpet professionally, who started me on the viola.
Right. That is a hard thing to do. And we all have instruments that we're not experts on that we have to teach, and we learn and we try to stay up. But there's nothing like being able to demonstrate for a musician on your own instrument, something that they can emulate.
And for you, that's saxophone, then?
Well, actually, I'm a clarinet major. Clarinet was my major at Ithaca College, and I love playing the clarinet. But my professional performing career has been almost exclusively on saxophone.
And it's been great to hear you at the jazz fests and other venues.
We are so lucky. I think people know this, but we are so lucky in Rochester to have the Rochester International Jazz Festival. It is the best 10 days of the year for so many of us. And John Nugent and Mark Iacona and Xerox and all the people that stand behind that. I always want to say, when I get a chance to say something publicly, thank you so much for bringing this international festival to us. And for committing to a couple of really important things for us as local teachers and musicians. There are always local artists in the Jazz Festival. John and Mark go out of their way to seek out local musicians to perform, and they have a huge commitment to an educational stage. The Jazz Street Stage, which is Gibbs and East, is opened every day by two or three high school bands. And that's become so integral to the festival that I think a lot of people come specifically early. Those start at like 4:30. I think they come specifically early to hear the kids.
And what is it? You've been up there leading student ensembles.
Right.
What is that experience like?
It's a really, I've led some student ensembles and the music educators jazz ensemble from Eastman Community Music School. And it's a thrill because it's a street environment. There's a lot of activity. You do have to deal with the weather. Sometimes we've gotten rained out. We've had terrible winds. We've been in 95 degrees and then some really cold days. But that's part of the That's part of what happens with outdoor festivals. But people are so generous with their attention and their applause for the young players. My students, and I know students across the Rochester area, really look forward to that chance at the end of the year.
And you've been teaching, as you've said, for now 30 plus years in the schools. Do you see kids coming to instruments for different reasons, for the same reasons?
I think music has always had a universal appeal. What I may have seen change is that students are spread probably thinner than they've ever been in terms of interests and activities. So we do have students that are sometimes overwhelmed by their own schedules. It's not atypical to have high school students that are taking three or four AP classes, being involved with music. They're on at least one sport. They're trying to have a job and make some money outside of school. They might be part of a youth group. They never eat dinner with their families. They are on the run a lot. That may be something that I think my colleagues around the county and actually around the country would agree with, that our kids are really overscheduled in many cases. So finding time to practice an instrument and to really excel at it, that might be more challenging than ever for some of the really motivated kids.
And you've also, teaching this many years now, seen your students probably grow up and come back, possibly be playing in the area or working in the area and
right.
still have that love of music.
That's a thrill. That's a thrill if I can. I tell you, the one of the Facebook has goods and has positives and negatives, but one of the benefits of it is staying in touch with students that have left the area and are still involved with music or not, but staying connected in their lives. And it is really a thrill when I see somebody come back who's a former student who's playing, even just in community groups, or some that have gone on to professions and whom I now see out in, you know, the public realm, which is really exciting for me.
Teaching, at least what my sense I get from talking to music teachers or to friends or to classmates of mine who went into the field, is challenging in general, just the teaching part. You know, you're doing interesting but hard work, but then there's also all this other stuff that goes with it as well, to negotiate the system, to advocate for the
sure.
fact that this is such an important experience.
You're right in that you have to work on your craft as a musician and as an educator constantly. That is also the beauty of teaching, is that you hopefully keep getting better at it. It's a lifelong journey. You hopefully, and hopefully with music, you keep practicing and learning and actually improving through your life. You do have more things outside of the teaching space that you have to contend with in today's schools. There's no doubt that there are a lot of state and federal requirements that are maybe different than they were years ago. I'm really fortunate in that I pretty much concentrate on teaching. I'm in a position where I'm able to do that, and I don't get too bogged down by a lot of the things that our younger teachers are so mired in. I feel sorry for younger teachers, because they're very often stressed out by a lot of things that take us away from actually the instructional parts of teaching. I think everybody who's a teacher would agree that there's a lot of extra paperwork now and requirements and meetings that take us a little bit away from what we're doing as teachers. So I always want to encourage young professionals, young teachers to always keep in mind why you're here, you know, and keep that just core in your thoughts and keep it really close to you, that it's easy to forget sometimes that it's the joy of making music with kids. It's why you got into it.
And you conduct a couple ensembles that bring together teachers from all over, both to hone their craft as musicians, but I imagine it's also an amazing experience to talk to other people who do the thing that you do and value the same thing.
We're really lucky to have two ensembles sponsored by the Eastman Community Music School for educators. One's a jazz ensemble that I started about 10 or 12 years ago. And it was somewhat of an informal group that just read through music at first, but we started performing at Kilburn Hall once a year. And we were invited to the Jazz Fest probably 8 or 10 years ago, and we've been ever since. And we'll even play sometimes out in the community, out in Parenton at the amphitheater there. And that has been such a great opportunity for instructors in the area who work with jazz and who are jazz players to get together and play in a big band, which we don't have as many opportunities for that as we did, as people did, you know, 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. And we concentrate on kind of two styles, both the traditional styles of big band playing, the Basie and the Ellington, and, you know, the more traditional straight ahead music. But then there's all this body of really fresh music that's been written for jazz ensembles that tends to be really challenging. And we have kind of started to concentrate on some of that new music, which invigorates the group and gives us ideas for our students. The other ensemble that ECMS sponsors is the Music Educators Wind Ensemble, which is relatively new. It's about 5 years old now, and we'll have our fifth summer season this coming year. We are so lucky we get an opportunity to play this year. It's August 2nd at Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater. And we've been incredibly fortunate to have Dr. Mark Scatterday from the Eastman Wind Ensemble as a guest conductor for, I think, all the summers that we've been in existence. That group in the summer tends to be about 75 teachers and related professionals who come together. And in the school year, we do three concerts as well. We just did a concert at Pittsford Sutherland High School this past week. We were at Roberts Wesleyan College earlier this year, and also at Victor High School. So we'll play three times in each school year and have about a 3 or 4 week season prior to each concert. So that has been an amazing experience to get teachers together to play. There's very little time in a teacher's schedule, but we do Sunday nights, which is a really rough time, especially for our young parents, you know, because they're just so tired. But they come into the city often, and we have a couple hours together. And it's inspiring for me. It's inspiring for them to play with each other. We're doing wonderful new and traditional literature as well for that group.
Yeah. Do you just have any story of a piece that you've learned with that group or an experience with that really sticks out that kind of sums up some of the experience of that?
Oh, that is such a good question. every concert there is something that is very meaningful and sometimes topical too. This last year, we did a piece called Music for Rosa, which was dedicated. It's a wonderful composition by Mark Camphouse that was dedicated to Rosa Parks. And there's a backstory to it that is helpful for an audience to understand the music if it's read prior to the prior to the performance. So we did that last year, and then when this summer's events turned the country's attention into such a broken place, when we had the Charlottesville problems and the tragedies that happened there and the stress and tension, I was compelled to bring that piece back and to kind of refocus it on what can we do as musicians to kind of spread positive will in the world. And we brought in we did that at Roberts Wesleyan College this past fall, and we had one of the instructors there do the introduction, which made it tremendously powerful for the audience. And I think sometimes you do pick music that is topical, that just brings together all of these different people who they're commonly bound by their love of playing music, and music can really express things that we're not able to always put words to. And collectively, I feel like we kind of created a really positive energy in that and sent some real goodwill into the world. This past week, we did a piece called Hymn to the Blue Hour by John Mackey, which is a piece that, if you're a musician, it looks really challenging in terms of bar lines, because it has a measure of 3-2 time and 2-2 time and then 6-4 and then 5-4. So it's very oddly constructed to look at. But the piece itself is, in my interpretation, is to be played and felt as if there were almost no bar lines. And getting us to kind of feel something that was very organic and would change from rehearsal to rehearsal, and that something was very passionate and lyrical and expressive and soft, really super soft at times. And again, reflecting a blue hour, which is those moments between daylight and nighttime where time can kind of rest and stop. That was a really binding experience for all of us and really brought us together. So there's always a piece with the Music Educators Wind Ensemble that I hope is very special for the performers, and then that translates to an audience.
Having been in the audience, it's amazing to see your concerts and to know that there are kids around me seeing their school band director up there, you know, being awesome, right? You know, in a way they don't always see them.
They do. One of the benefits of having educators ensembles is have the kids see their teachers play and see them play with. I always talk about the music educators is that we're not from our different schools, but we're all here to make music together, and that there are no competitive divisions between musicians when it comes to really, really going for what we're about as musicians, which is to share and to collaborate and to work together in the most intimate of ways. So when our students see band directors from around the whole region playing together and working so well together, I think that's an incredible example to them. And they are inspired by it, and they think it's fun to see their teachers play.
And I wouldn't have thought to ask it except for you mentioned playing something topical relating to Charlottesville. Is there some sense for you personally or for people you work with now, I guess, as people are talking about schools and teachers and dealing with all of this?
You can't be a teacher and separate yourself from the anguish of what happened last week, for example. We had a concert at my high school on Thursday night, a week ago Thursday, and we were still reeling from just trying to process the news of another unfathomable tragedy in America. And I spoke to my students. We were working on a beautiful piece by Eric Whitaker, the subtitle of which is Light and Gold, Lux, L-U-X, Arumq, A-R-U-M-Q-U-E, that has, for us up to that point, had been about trying to focus positive energy and kind of turn sound into light. And I spoke to the students ahead of time. I said, don't we need this today? Don't we need this kind of a piece? And so we dedicated the piece that night to, again, sending positive energy to Florida and to everybody affected and to all of us and to connect us energetically and in our pain over something like that, to connect us and to try to, again, send something positive into the world. And on that same concert, I had a guest artist who is a DMA candidate at Eastman School of Music. His name's Ted Perry. He's a pianist working with Bill Dobbins and Gary Versace and Dave Ravello at the Eastman School of Music as a pianist and a writer and an educator. He was a guest artist in that concert with my jazz ensemble there. And he had written a piece called Elegy for Charlie Hayden, the wonderful late bassist that has been so influential to so many people who play jazz and who specifically play the bass. And he and I played that as duet at this concert, and we just dedicated it to our broken hearts about the Florida shooting. And so I think that music should not be separated from the events that happen in the world, but that we can heal, at least we can provide some healing within our student communities and maybe in our audience communities, and then send that into the world.
Thank you for speaking about that.
You're welcome.
And then I just want to ask, since you did come up in the same program that you now lead, are there some band directors or experiences you had that what fostered your love of both playing? I know this is a big thing to ask, especially when we have just a couple minutes, but maybe one or two thoughts on getting inspired with music and then deciding that you would teach.
Great questions. As I mentioned, I was a clarinet student in high school. I didn't play the saxophone until I was a senior in high school, and I just wanted to be in the jazz ensemble. So I didn't have lessons, but I tried to pick it up enough to play in the jazz band. And so clarinet was my entry to school music programs, and I had an amazing teacher for most of the time that I played the clarinet, and his name was Waldo Woodworth. And I just was so inspired by him that I felt like music should be something that I should pursue. I wasn't positive that I could be a teacher, and I didn't think I would have any chance to be an instructor as influential as he was. And you make decisions in life based on on strengths and weaknesses. I was not an athlete. You know, I tried that like every kid does. I was really terrible at sports, still am. And
despite the fact that looking at you, someone might immediately want you on their basketball team.
Well, I can dunk for sure, but no, I would probably injure myself really hard. Because of my height. Right. A lot of people do assume that I play basketball, and I actually tried that too, but hilariously poorly. So, you know, you go with strengths, and my mom always said, you know, you really love music and you're pretty good at it. You know, why don't you consider that? And so I went to SUNY Geneseo as a music student, and there was a clarinet professor there named Dave Glick, who's still in the Rochester area. He was such a great player and teacher, and I wanted to learn as much as I could about the clarinet, and ended up transferring to Ithaca College. And at that time, I had never taught a lesson or knew that I could, but I started to have some experiences in teaching other kids on clarinet when they played maybe flute or saxophone or something else. And I really liked that. And then I enrolled in the music ed program at Ithaca College and realized that I loved teaching little kids and older kids, and that I was really inspired by that. So it was a process that took some time. I was super lucky because I got a job right out of college in Auburn, New York, and I had amazing colleagues, Norm Beamish, who just passed away this past month, and Steve Gage, who's the director of bands out at Youngstown State University, were my two colleagues that I worked together with every single day for 4 years, and they shaped me and molded me and inspired me and taught me so much. So I was so lucky because I found something that I could be, I felt comfortable in that field, and then I had great mentors who helped shape me.
I just want to ask, is there anything else you want to add while I have you here? I mean, I feel like I could talk to you for hours about this.
Thanks. I would like to thank WXXI for those of us that teach music. You know, you get in a car or anywhere and you can have access to amazing classical music. We don't always get a chance to play classical music in high schools. I'm really lucky at Fairport that we have an orchestra. I get to conduct them once a year. We're doing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I'm doing the Fourth Movement. What an amazing experience it is to do that. I'll be so happy every morning that happens. But the classical music that has influenced us in so many ways to go into music, sometimes we don't get a chance to hear that in schools. You know, we're working on all kinds of other things, and it's, of course, informed and inspired by classical music. But to hear Mozart and to hear Beethoven and to hear Brahms and to hear Bach and to turn on XXI and hear the programming that is, I love the Sunday Baroque program. I know it's a national program. So I'm just so grateful that WXXI is here and that it's at a fingertip away, and that all of us that teach music need to keep kind of checking in with, why is this music so amazing? I just had an experience today with somebody who said it to me, and he's not a musician, it sounds like this music was created by something outside of this world. It's so incredibly powerful. And we sometimes forget that when we're teaching, because we get away from Brahms and Beethoven and Bach and Mozart, and we realize, oh, we have to keep coming back to that. So not that there isn't tons and tons of great new music, but so thank you to all the team here for the 24-hour commitment every single day. It makes us a better place to live here.
Oh. Well, thank you for continuing to inspire through your teaching and through playing and just through being a joy in the community.
Oh,
just
thanks.
Whether we're running into each other at Wegmans or seeing you play at Stromboli's or anywhere.
Right, Stromboli's, by the way. Dave Mantle has a great place there. It's a great pizza. Thank you so much.